When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Bigfoot Collectors Club presents Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction.
Welcome to a very special Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history. And of course, share stories of high strangeness. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson.
And our super producer,
Riley Bray.
Oh, boy. Oh, boys, guess what?
What?
It's summertime.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, baby. Sizzle.
You know what that means, don't you?
I mean, I'm breaking out the guns, breaking out the tank tops.
Oh, can't wait for that.
For a moment, I thought I was worried you meant actual guns, and I thought we'd have to pause this. And
I fucking wish I had a gun collection.
Talk to you.
Don't get me started.
No, guys, it's Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction.
Yes.
All summer long, we're going to be covering
abduction.
Stories of high strangeness. Featuring UFOs, UAPs, aliens, alien abductions, close encounters, you name it.
It's
a sequel to last summer's hit series, Wet Hot Alien Summer. This one is a sequel. It's Summer Abduction. Does that mean we're going to be doing more abduction stories? I don't know. It just sounds sexy to me.
It sounds so sexy.
And guys, speaking of sexy, okay, what better way to celebrate Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction, than with some brand new merch?
Come on now.
Now, that's right. We're not only bringing back last summer's Wet Hot Alien Summer t-shirt by James Maholland.
Wore that today at the gym.
We couldn't resist. Oh, guys, this is hot off the presses. I'm literally getting it emailed to me as we speak.
Oh, no shit. Really?
I brought James. Oh, dude. I'm going to send this to you. I'm going to text this to everybody here on the show.
Oh, snap.
We got James back for a sequel to the shirt. It's the Wet Hot Alien Summer 2. T-shirt, this time with 100% more Lamborghini. I'm gonna forward this to you guys.
Has he ever done a shirt sequel? I mean, is this his first shirted sequel?
That's a good question. I don't know if James has actually like created a sequel shirt to a shirt that he created.
But, I imagine it might be his first.
Okay, I'm trying to send this to all you guys, including our guest. So this shirt is going to be up on the shop right now. The Campfire, we are campfire.media merch shop right now. So you can go to the link in our show notes, the merch link, or you can go to the link tree in our Instagram at Bigfoot Collectors Club, at Bigfoot Pod on Twitter, and you can pick up that shirt. And here's the crazy thing, guys, because not only can you get last year's shirt and this new shirt, we also have the BCC Clubhouse shirt by Derek Cole, which we announced a couple weeks ago. And we have Popsicle Bigfoot, a new shirt from artist Holly Reddy, which we revealed last week on our Instagram. Guys, you are going to be decked out for the summer. I cannot wait for you guys to take a look at this shirt. It's great. All right, let's talk.
Just got it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Oh, man, is that good.
So click the merch link in our show notes to pick those up, plus the other two new shirts we have for you, the BCC Clubhouse by Derek Cole and Popsicle Bigfoot from artist Holly Reddy, which we revealed last week on our Instagram. Guys, you're going to be looking so sharp for the summer. It's crazy. All right.
Yeah, the merch is on fire like never before. It's we have some amazing, amazing stuff.
I cannot wait for you guys to see
that new BCC drip.
I cannot wait for you guys to see this new Wet Hot Alien Summer 2 shirt. It's got features a UFO abducting a very 80s sports car. Get over there and check it out. Bryce, you should have it in your inbox, and so does our guest if you want to take a look at it. But
is it in my Gmail or did you text it?
I sent it to your email account, Bryce.
Oh, okay.
It's in an email.
Okay.
Come on, Grandpa.
Speaking of which.
Okay. Oh, it's so cool. It's so good. Oh, my God.
All right. So
I'm coming on my computer.
Let's talk about
Lambo.
Legally, I don't know if we can say
Lambo. Lambo
jizz. I don't know if we can say it's a Lamborghini legally, but we'll just say it's a cool sports car. I don't know.
It's a Lamborghini.
It's a Lamborghini.
Listen, that ass is undeniable. That's a Lamborghini.
Let's talk about...
Dude, that is so amazing.
Let's talk about supporting the show. Okay, guys? There are a few ways you can do that. First, you want to join our Patreon, Bigfoot Collectors Club, The Other Side, where you'll get at least 3 bonus episodes every month, including a video version of one of our monthly eps. This episode... Those episodes drop on Fridays. And, of course, Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction, will be happening over there as well. If you want to support BCC but don't want all of that extra content because you're crazy, you can do so on our homepage at buymeacoffee.com. The links to those are in our link tree in the show notes and in our bios on Twitter and Instagram. And finally, if you want to support the show for free, please do us a favor. Guys, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do it, we might read it on the air like this one that Bryce is going to read for you right now.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I emailed that to you too, like 6 hours
ago. Okay, here we go. 5-star review. Okay, here we go. I'm right on top of it. Love It First Listen by Shmesh J. I truly love this show. I stumbled over it to it after hearing a crossover episode with a funny feeling and haven't looked back. I'm a huge fan of the paranormal and anything related to the ooky, spooky, or mysterious, and these gentlemen and their stories hit the mark while making me chuckle along the way. 5 stars. Thank you, Shmesh.
Thank you, Shmesh. And remember, guys, as we announced last week, if we get 1,000 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and look, I think it needs to be 1,000 5-star reviews, not just 1,000 reviews, okay? We don't want 1,000 1-star reviews, all right? So we got to hit 1,000 5-star reviews. We will record the promised BCC jet ski special, which I think would be a lovely way to end the summer. We got about 400 reviews to go, so you guys get on it. And if we hit 1,000 monthly Patreon subscribers, Bryce will ride a jet ski naked and we'll post a video of it on The Other Side.
Hey, we're doing what we can here over at the Bigfoot Collectors Club.
And you know what, Bryce? I'm going to tell our listeners this. If you get us to 2,000 Patreon subscribers, I'm going to strip right next to my buddy Bryce and I'm going to get on a jet ski next to him and we're both going Dutch. All right? We're going new jet skiing together.
Dutch jet skis.
Yeah, we're doing it. Okay, guys? And I'm just going to put it out there. This is up to Riley. You know, if we hit 3,000, maybe even something, maybe we'll make it a trio. We'll find out. But I think that would be a wonderful Labor Day weekend for everyone involved. Okay, that's enough BCC business. Let's bring in tonight's guest. He's an author. He's a podcaster. He's a UFO investigator. Perfect time to bring him in to help us kick off Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction. You can listen to him uncover the world of UFOs and UAPs every week on his podcast, Somewhere in the Skies. Club Scouts of all timelines, please welcome back to the clubhouse, Ryan Sprague.
Yeah!
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me. We have so much to catch up on since I last talked to you. But I do want to say, first and foremost, I think you're the first podcast I've come across that has a sequel to their apparel. Yeah. So congratulations on that. Yeah. You're creating a whole story here. I love it.
It's too bad that you do a UFO podcast in a year that has just got so much, you know, it's devoid of UFO news. You might want to be thinking about picking a new podcast subject. I don't know.
I know, man. I know we're UFOs are the most uncool thing right now, apparently. What? No, it's been incredible. I hope people can sense the sarcasm in that. It's for as a UFO researcher, I feel like finally I've been vindicated. People don't think I'm crazy anymore. So
do you think?
Yeah, totally. I'm sure we'll go through that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get right into it. So do you think that this is maybe the most exciting time that you've had as a ufologist? Like, is it now, or was like 2017 when this Pentagon report first came out, was that more exciting?
I mean, it was exciting, Michael, but I do think right now we're living in some sort of alternate universe where, you know, the government is finally acknowledging the existence of UFOs. And it's crazy, man. Yeah, I mean, the New York Times article in 2017 was cool and definitely took the world by storm for maybe like a week. And then no one really talked about it.
Right.
But no, you cannot turn on any news station or read in the newspaper and not come across a mainstream coverage of UFOs now. It's incredible. So
yeah,
I think this is my Christmas, guys. I really do.
It's water cooler talk now, right? It's like, I feel like everybody is talking about it. It's like you said, and you know, what a nice little vindication for you. And we're waiting for that to happen with Bigfoot. We're waiting for
that's
a lot
your
of that
job.
Media attention to.
Yeah, you're I'm working getting, on yeah. it. You're
UFOs
getting
there, are Ryan's.
You've made some headlines, buddy.
Yeah, UFOs are Ryan's thing, and Bigfoot's your thing, and you guys are both, you know, helping bring it about. So for people who are listening or this is their first episode and go, what are these guys talking about? In the past few weeks, as Ryan said, there's been a bunch of new UFO news come out. The New Yorker just had a huge article in it that basically covers the whole history of the UFO phenomenon in a really great way. Kind of covers everything from Kenneth Arnold to Skinwalker Ranch to Robert Bigelow and now Luis Elizondo. Like it's got everything.
I love that you stopped yourself from saying Bob Lazar. It almost came out of your mouth. I felt it
I
go
don't
back
think
in.
They bring up Bob Lazar in that article. I don't know, but there's like we're getting new UFO videos released. The Pentagon is disclosing more things, videos that are saying yes, that this is authentic video. I think there's parts about that I kind of want to unpack with you, Ryan, but I'm getting texts from like friends back home who I know aren't really following this stuff on the regs. And they're like, what is this? And I'm like, yep. And I think it's funny that you brought up the news cycle because my theory is, you know, the news cycle has calmed down a little bit recently. I mean, obviously, there's still a ton of stuff going on. But like, we're not living in, you know, the world where the previous administration sort of sucked the air out of all the news. Like it was all the focus seemed to be there. And now I think that things have maybe quieted down a little bit. Like now people are catching up on all this stuff that's been coming. Because I remember the past 3 years were like, why is nobody talking about this? And it's just because the news the news cycle was so jam-packed full of craziness, you know?
Absolutely, man. That's a really good theory. And, you know, it's very plausible that because we're not, you know, getting new tweets from, you know, the commander-in-chief every 10 minutes or stuff like that, that, yeah, it seems a little boring. I'm not going to lie. And sometimes that's for the better, in my opinion. So, yeah, while there's not a lot going on lately, besides, obviously, the pandemic we're making our way through, and hopefully we're soon going to be on the other side of that, there's not a lot going on, at least domestically. So, I mean, why not? Why not make UFOs the big thing right now? I think it's amazing. And I don't care, to be honest, the motivation behind it. I'm just riding the wave, man. I'm so excited. If you can hear it in my voice, that I'm just like bursting to talk about this with anyone who's willing to listen. Finally,
well, where do you
find?
Well, speaking of, you know, the former commander in chief, I think in large part he's partly credited for giving this a little second wind here coming into 2021, because he put in his stimulus bill a directive which ordered the U.S. intelligence agencies to prepare a detailed overview of the UFO mystery for submission to Congress. And that deadline is, I believe it's June 25th, and it's coming up really soon.
It's crazy, man. Yeah. So for any of your listeners who don't know, yes, in that huge COVID relief bill, Trump did sign this tiny, tiny caveat within the Senate Intelligence Committee about this report that they want given to Congress. The Department of the Navy and the Office of the Secretary of Defense, they have to, like you mentioned, on June 25th, give a report to Congress. Some of it might be made public. Most of it will be classified due to national security purposes. But yeah, man, June 25th, hopefully around that date, they might delay it. Who knows? We're going to get the Pentagon's information on UFOs. It's
now
crazy.
And
we do have Trump to thank for
how
that.
How much is that going to be? How much out of that is going to be redacted, do you think?
Oh, I have no doubt, man, that a lot of it we're never going to see. And again, I understand that both as a UFO researcher and as a citizen of the United States, there's certain things that just can't be made public. But I mean, I work for this website, this news site that covers defense, security, tech, all that good stuff. And we have actually buddied up to some very important people in the intelligence agencies and also within the Pentagon UFO task force. And we know for a fact that we're going to get some stuff. It's not just going to be this thing that they think the public is going to forget about and move on. Like, we are pressuring these people and we are covering this, and they have people who want to give the public information. So we are happy to provide that if it's given to us. And I have no doubt we're going to get some really exciting
stuff. So what do you, okay, first of all, I want to unpack. So you're friends with some people and they know people. What's going on here? What are you talking about, Ryan?
I got a guy who knows a guy. So again, this website that I work for, The Debrief, we have several of our journalists who have colleagues in the intelligence community. That is how in earlier this year, we broke a story of several reports that the Pentagon was looking at in terms of these UFOs in this task force. They gave them to us. We vetted everything. We took almost a year to look into all of it, and we put it out there. And these are reports that were in the Pentagon task force of UFOs. And we're not talking just like, you know, a light in the sky, man. We're talking some crazy, detailed, scary incidents that pilots have encountered. So,
oh, wow.
Like
yeah,
what?
Yeah. And again, there is one that I can share with you guys. So back in, oh gosh.
Oh, so this stuff hasn't back even earlier, been released yet. Some of this stuff.
Not some of it. I mean, we did release a photo that a pilot took of this sort of almost triangular shaped object in the distance. That was one of the reports that the Pentagon was looking at. And the pilot took it on his cell phone And, you know, we did our best to try to come up with what it possibly could be. Maybe it's a Mylar balloon. Maybe it's, you know, a really close up bird, whatever. We tried to find every prosaic explanation for this photo that even the Pentagon couldn't understand what it was. So we broke that on the debrief, kind of went viral for a little while. And then we talked to a few other news outlets, including George Knapp, the investigative journalist, who released other photos that were leaked to him. So now you've got all these rogue people within the Pentagon coming to us, coming to George Knapp, coming to Jeremy Corbell, and giving us stuff that the Pentagon is looking at. Now, there could be several reasons for that. Some people think we're being played, you know, or that we're part of some disinformation campaign. But I'll tell you, man, these videos, these photos, they're super compelling. And if this is what they're looking at, I can't even imagine what the stuff they're looking at that we will never see.
So this is great. This is really exciting. And I remember a couple weeks ago, and we haven't really talked a lot too much about this stuff on the show. I was kind of saving it for the kickoff of Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction. I remember Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp released a video of this like pyramid UFO, you know, that there was a lot of debate on whether or not it was actually a plane. It was sort of a night vision-y thing. And the Pentagon came out and said the video is authentic, and people were, you know, the pro UFO people were like, see, it's real. It's real. Now, my question for you, Ryan, is, okay, now is the Pentagon saying, well, the video is authentic. It did come from us. But are they saying, and also the UFO is authentic, or are they just acknowledging that, yes, this was camera footage that, you know, came out of our offices, you know, but there.
That is a really good question, Michael. I mean, we were actually at the debrief. We were the first to confirm with the Pentagon that both the pyramid video and this other video that Jeremy Corbell released, you know, this other object, I'm sure we'll talk about.
The sort of globulous looking silver thing. And that was outside of the cockpit of a jet, right?
I believe so, yes, if I'm not mistaken. So both the pyramid video and this oval-shaped object, globular object, that actually appeared to submerge into the ocean.
Oh, right.
These two were confirmed to us by Susan Goh. She's the public affairs officer for the Pentagon. She deals with all UFO stuff, so she both loves and hates me and a lot of people for hounding her, dude, like every second.
I'm sorry, if you get on the UFO desk of the Pentagon, like, you're gonna have to deal with some nerds.
yeah, do some push-ups. Well, okay, they are authentic. That's what we were told by the Pentagon. Now, what I believe they mean by authentic is, yes, these were shot by, you know, members of the USS Russell for the pyramid video, or members of the USS Omaha, I believe it was, for this other, you know, UFO submerging into the water, and authentic in terms of they are still unidentified.
Got it.
So I think that's what's most important. They're not saying they're alien. They're not saying it's a Chinese or Russian drone. They remain unidentified and they remain unsolved by the Pentagon task force. So you do have to wonder, then what does that mean? What are we looking at? These were videos that the task force showed in briefings to members of the Navy, the military, the Air Force, everyone in between, to try to come up with answers, and none of them could. So again, why are they being leaked to the public now when this report is due in almost less than a month now? You truly have to wonder.
Yeah, and there's still, you know, it's so funny to me, I guess, just like still how far they sort of stretch to just be like, and look, you know, this could be Russian, this could be Chinese, and it's just, can we just call it a UFO for, you know, as call it what it is for once? It's like, I should be working for that agency, and they'd just be like, what do you think, Bryce? Mylar? No, that's UFO for sure, 100%. All the way. Sure. Yeah, for that's sure. Not Russian. That's not Chinese. I know what that is.
Yeah. But
tell us more. UFO.
Bryce, you bring up a good point too, man. Like, if we were dealing with China or Russia, like, these Tic Tac things, you know, back in 2004 off the Nimitz carrier, you know, Commander Fravor witnessed, and now the female pilot that was involved has now gone public, which is amazing. Yep. We've been trying to get her to go public for almost a year and a half.
She was on 60 Minutes.
She's out there, man.
Right? I think she was on 60 Minutes last week.
Yep. And she's been incredible. You know, she's embraced a lot of us UFO people. We could be pretty tenacious and weird at times, but she's been amazing in sharing information with all of us about what she experienced. But I guess what I'm trying to say is they were in a training exercise during that in the Navy, in restricted airspace, and these Tic Tacs were there. So let's say it was Russian or China. That's an act of war. I mean, they have breached not only like, you know, our training area, but right. they're messing with our pilots. So I've talked to Christopher Mellon, the former deputy Secretary of Defense, and he told me, dude, we're not dealing with Russia or China. I mean, I guarantee you that.
Totally. I love that because it's just I never for once thought, and I'm sure you didn't either, anybody who's been following this for as long as you or even us have, that there's just no way this is some foreign tech. And you know, I think a lot of people forget, like, these pilots like Fravor and this female pilot. I wish I had her name at the tip of my tongue.
Alex Dietrich.
There you go. Thank you. But I think people forget, but these people are now experiencers themselves. So of course they want answers. And of course they're going to be sort of open to the community that's been digging into this for decades. And, you know, their probably tip of knowledge is so shallow, and they probably want to do a quick catch up on everything what they know about this UFO topic, or UAP as we're now sort of selectively calling them. But they probably want to know the history behind UFOs.
Yeah, I mean, I have had Luis Elizondo, the former head of the secret Pentagon UFO program, ATIP, and I had him on my show, I don't know, maybe like 5 months ago now, and I asked him, you know, we've heard these rumors that government people show up to these UFO conferences. They're all, you know, in their trench coats at Contact in the Desert, or, right. you know, what, insert weird UFO conference here. Is that true? And he kind of paused, and then he said, have you gotten a lot of new, like, Twitter followers in the past year or so? And I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, UFOs are kind of in. People are interested. They find my show. He's like, no, it's not that. He's like, I guarantee you that some of those Twitter accounts are people in the Pentagon Task Force, in the Navy, and they right. watch you guys. Because, again, I'm one of those UFO researchers, Bryce, who believes that the government doesn't know a hell of a lot about UFOs, where some believe they have all the answers. I'm not there, man. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the evidence of that. You know, just because they cover something up doesn't mean they know what it was. So he told me, Elizondo told me, they are getting their information from you guys, which gave me chills, man, thinking about
that. That's amazing. Well, because, yeah, if you're in the intelligence community, you know, this isn't something you're going to unpack over the weekend. You know what I mean? It's a big catch-up game. There's so much material, so many accounts and experiences to go over, so many different facets of just what this phenomenon is. It probably just makes their heads spin.
Absolutely. Again, you put it best, man. These aren't people who've been, you know, investigating UFOs like Mulder their whole life. They were put into this position. They're probably not happy about it. Let's be completely honest. Like, nobody wants to be the UFO person. Elizondo did not want to be the UFO person at the Department right. of Defense. It was a job he was given, a task he was given, and I personally think he did it really damn well. But they pulled his funding. And they moved on because they didn't think there was anything to it. And now look at where we are, man. It's insane what has happened in the past couple of years.
So why do you
think it's incredible.
Why do you think they shut that down? Is it just to, you know, our theory was that they shut it down just to start something new up. You know what I mean? But, like, why would they think there's nothing to it, you know?
Right. And I'm sorry if you can hear, there's a helicopter right over my studio right now. It's the Men in Black.
They're coming for you.
They're on.
They listen to Bigfoot Collectors Club before it even drops on. That's how good they are at listening to the podcast. They can hear it as it's being recorded.
Yeah. Michael, what did you ask me, man? I got so distracted there.
No, that's okay.
I was just asking,
like, why do you think they did shut down that program? Was it just that, you know, our theory was that they were starting up a new thing But like, why did they think there was nothing to it? Or is that actually the case? Like,
right. My theory, and you know, Elizondo did share some specifics with me and my audience of like, you know, why they kind of moved on. And it's because none of the information that they were getting, whether it was videos or photos or testimony from pilots, truly showed a national security threat. Like, there was no UFO to touch.
Right.
There was nothing to really study. So we kind of just go on what these pilots say. But, you know, it's over. Like, the world has moved on. They didn't blow up our base, so whatever. And Elizondo was frustrated by that. So he said, yeah, but come on, guys. Like, this thing came into the airspace during a training mission when the pilots did not have any weapons on their plane. Like, what if it was something that was here to mess us up? Like,
right.
This is a potential threat. We have to keep looking at it. So that's when he quit. And I'll tell you this, just because he quit doesn't mean the program ended. It, like you said, Michael, that's what happens. These things sort of dissolve and then get put into other programs and other contracts. So who knows? There could still be an ATIP going on in tandem with the Pentagon UFO Task Force.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the days of Battle Los Angeles are over, where we just start lobbing a barrage of ammo and munitions up at whatever's in the sky that we can't identify. And you know what? I miss that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I miss those days too, man. We need a good kind of alien invasion to happen again. But that's what a lot of people think this is. You know, the Pentagon is creating this fear in the country that something's going to happen. So let's give $50 billion more dollars to the Navy. Right. Let's up the funding, you know.
Well, now you're talking some Stephen Greer narrative, and it's funny because, you know, you can't leave him out when the UFO topic's getting hot. I recently saw something he said. I think it was on one of his shows, but he was like, and I'll quote him, "Lou Elizondo is a professional disinformation agent putting out false intelligence about the UFO matter throughout the mainstream media." So, you know, he's getting quaffed. He's getting a little ticked off at all the attention guys like Lou is getting and all these pilots who are seeing something. I feel like he's like, you know, gotta insert his narrative in there somewhere, you know?
Yeah, narrative is the key word, I think, guys. You know, you have Stephen Greer, who, for some of your audience who may not know, this guy, he's a former, I think, doctor who kind of gave that up to be the guy in ufology to get disclosure and uncover the free energy that the government is keeping from us. And,
right.
You know, he believes that all these aliens visiting us are peaceful and that he can help you contact them for $7,000, you know, just give him the money and he will shine a flashlight in the sky and vector in the UFOs. But then you got Elizondo saying these are a potential threat. So you're right. We have dueling narratives and a lot of people think it's aliens visiting for peaceful reasons and others think they're coming to invade us. So it's an interesting time in ufology right now. I feel like I'm in Braveheart or something.
Do you know where my first Stephen Greer red flag came from? And there have been many along this journey. But the first Stephen Greer red flag for me is I read his book. I forget the name of it. I think it was called Disclosure or something, whatever it was. But it was his first book, sort of his origin story. And he's like, you know, after you're right, he was an emergency trauma surgeon. And then he got into meditation and he said, and I remember when I was meditating, I lifted up off the ground. And I was like, oh, bullshit. And I was like, so this guy's saying he could fucking levitate. Like, I'm going to just mark this with a highlighter, a red one, and call this a flag.
But now, Bryce, anyway. Bryce, what if Uri Geller said he did that? What would you say?
Hey, man, that's spoon bending and that's a different thing, Michael.
I just listened to your Uri Geller episode, by the way, guys. Fantastic work.
Oh, now, where do you stand on all that stuff? Remote viewing, Stanford Research Institute, guys like Uri Geller and telekinesis. And
Bryce,
do you have any thoughts or opinions about that?
Back to Uri Geller.
He loves it.
He's an expert. I want to hear what Ryan Sprague has to say on that.
Oh, dude. I have no doubt there's something to it. Look at the work that Annie Jacobson did, you know, yeah. Tracing it back to the days when, you know, the Nazi party fell and both Russia and America found some crazy stuff that Germany had been looking into when it comes to remote viewing and telekinesis. And what happened? Russia got half the information. America got the other. Hence, you know, this kind of secret Cold War going on.
Absolutely.
And I firmly believe there's something to it. Like you said, Project Stargate, the U.S. government did programs with remote viewing and were highly successful with them. Yeah. And then you have members who were in that program, Hal Puthoff being one of them, Dr. Hal Puthoff, who then worked with Tom DeLonge into the STARS Academy and is a big part of the UFO narrative right now. So this stuff is all connected somehow, or it's all complete BS. I don't know.
Well, I love to glue it back to all these players because it becomes a little incestuous, and I kind of love that, But yeah, you're right. I mean, these are extremely intelligent individuals dealing with this stuff. But we were talking about Annie Jacobson's fascinating book, Phenomenon. She's a Pulitzer Prize finalist. I highly recommend that book for anybody who wants a more, you know, to get their handle on that type of subject. But anyway.
Ryan, you set me up for my next question. What's the state? What is the state of To the Stars Academy? because I know that Louis Elizondo left, and then there was some announcement that they're like, hey man, we're gonna make movies, and you know, but what were they trying to do, and why did it end in the way that it did?
Yeah, it's an interesting, I guess, and sort of convoluted story. So, you know, Tom DeLonge, former Blink-182 guy, he started this company called To the Stars Academy, which was kind of an offshoot of his media company, To the Stars, where he specifically wanted to focus on, you know, UFOs and the subject when it came to what the government knows or doesn't know, what our military is experiencing. And he got some super highly credentialed individuals to come work with him at this new academy. The dream team, like you said.
Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen.
It was the 85 U.S. Olympic basketball team, pretty much.
Exactly.
In ufology. Yeah.
Dennis Rodman was
more
there.
Like the Globetrotters. Yeah.
The
Globetrotters. So I guess, you know, they did a lot. And the thing that DeLonge was very upfront about when he started this quote unquote academy is there will be a science division, there will be an entertainment division. And what happened is basically the people he got to work with him in the government made incredible progress while there. They are the reason To the Stars Academy, Christopher Mellon in specific, is the reason that report is going to be due in June. He is the one who drafted it, who put the wording in there, who formerly worked with the Senate Intelligence Committee. So he's the whole reason that any of this is happening right now. And then you got the dude who worked for the Pentagon on the UFO program and several other individuals who kind of stayed in the shadows, former Skunk Works employees who worked on the most highly advanced stealth craft we've ever come across. And again, it was amazing. But what ended up happening is the government stuff was kind of in front, which is awesome. But I guess, and I don't know this for a fact, you know, I'm not like tight with Tom DeLonge or anything. I wish that were the case. The entertainment part was kind of lagging. So these guys, Mellon, Elizondo, they decided to give Tom some space to kind of do his own thing and focus on his media.
Because he's like, so, I still have to make money.
Exactly, guys, man. Like, these guys were not rolling in dough from To the Stars Academy. I can tell you, I know that for a fact. But they really didn't care. I mean, these guys have pensions in the government. They still have security clearances. Like, they're fine. They're doing okay. So they were doing this because, again, I genuinely think they wanted the information that the Pentagon was not willing to look at or make public. So, boom. They kind of, I guess, quit, quote unquote, and let Tom continue to do his stuff. He's making movies now. He's got his books, his TV shows that are coming out soon. But they're still continuing their work in the government when it comes to getting stuff out there. So they're still talking. They're still working together. This isn't like they broke up or anything. So, yeah, it's an interesting kind of story of it's almost like a band breaking up. You know, they never truly break up.
They're just doing solo projects.
Exactly, yeah. Man. They got to see how they do on their own.
Sleeping with each other's girlfriends.
Oh, man. That would be a pretty big scandal, and I hope I'm the first to break that story, Michael.
Well, speaking of breaking stories, you teased a moment ago, a little while back, that you had a new story that you guys were about to break on the debrief.
Yes. So again, like I mentioned, we were given several of these reports from the task force that might not be made public in June, or might, we don't know that, but we broke a story a while ago that kind of connects to a lot of stuff going on now of, this one report that supposedly, and again, we don't have the hard, firm evidence yet, but Michael, they, in one of the reports, it included an extremely clear, what we were told, quote, extremely clear photograph of an unidentifiable triangular aircraft.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
The photograph, which is said to have also been taken from inside the cockpit of a fighter jet, depicted an apparent aerospace vehicle described as a large equilateral triangle. Obviously, I'm reading this verbatim, with rounded or blunted edges and large, perfectly spherical white lights in each corner. Officials who had seen it said the image was captured in 2019. But that, you know, at first I was like, yeah, of course, like people see these triangles all the
classic
time. Yeah. But the fact that it's a clear photo, and this is what really got me, guys, gave me chills. Two officials that received the report said the photo was taken after the triangular craft emerged from the ocean and began to ascend straight upwards at a 90-degree angle. It was indicated that this event occurred off the eastern coast of the United States. So, again, this, like, if this is true, which I have no reason not to believe it is, if it's in the report and that the pilots actually got this, there's not only a clear photo, but there's video of the object ascending out of the ocean.
What?
So this is again,
this a teaser
I can't guarantee...
for Marvel's Eternals, because that's what your ship looks like in the trailer.
Yep, I noticed that the other day, man, when the trailer dropped. I'm like, oh, there it is, the Pentagon. They're using Marvel now as their disclosure. Yeah, yeah. So this is crazy, if true. And I have no reason to believe that the photo does not exist. Whether or not we will actually see it is another story, but that's ufology.
When?
God, you know, I do find it fascinating that this sort of UFO, UAP narrative is also evolving this arm that a lot of these things are coming in and out of the ocean, you know? And I believe those are termed USOs, unidentified submergible objects. But I think that's going to be like part of the story going forward is like, is there an underwater UFO base, or is this just like, is there portals beneath the ocean, or what's going on there? You know, I mean, so often we think of these things as coming from Zeta Reticuli, not the Indian Ocean, but perhaps it's a little bit of both.
It is, man. And that's why the Navy seems to be out front right now with all of this. 60 Minutes report, all the mainstream coverage, it's all about the Navy, which, you know, kind of statistically makes sense. The Navy is worldwide. They're going to have much more experiences than the Marines or the Air Force. But the Air Force has been unusually quiet about all of this. Wow. So that makes me wonder either what are they hiding or what do they have?
Don't look in the basement of the Air Force. We don't have anything in the basement of the Air Force, guys.
Oh, no, just our homebrew setup. That's all that's down there. Don't worry about that.
Oh, man, I could go for an IPA right now. So bad. Well, to mention USOs, I'll just add, like, I'm in Hawaii right now. I'm not on vacation. I'm not putting my feet in the sand and drinking daiquiris, but I'm actually here to investigate several USO incidents.
Whoa, tell us all about it.
Yeah, man. So do you guys remember, I think it was back in December of last year, Hawaii had that like blue UFO thing.
Yeah, I was there in Hawaii in December, and it happened right after I came back home. But I was like, "Oh my god!" Like, hot off the topic. Yeah,
I remember, Bryce. Yeah, I think we had spoken at that time that you said you were there when it happened. I had left like maybe a week. I was on the island previous to that. I had left like a week before it happened. Of course, of course. But so the blue UFO thing, if any of your listeners don't know, yeah, it was sighted on Oahu. It was a cylindrical blue object that was seen all across the island. And then it started going to the west side of the island, and then it descended and disappeared into the ocean. Wow. So at the debrief, we contacted the FAA, the local Honolulu police, and everyone to see if they had anything on this. And they said, no, like, there's no missing aircraft. We don't know what it was. And it was pretty interesting. So I contacted some people here on the island who I confide in with UFO stuff. And they told me that these reports keep coming in of these objects being seen on Oahu and going into the ocean. So I got my butt back over here, and I'm looking at a case right now where a local fisherman saw two metallic objects come out of the ocean and dart off in opposite directions at breakneck speed. So again, guys, I don't know what the hell these things are. I'm not saying they're alien, but they are definitely not our military doing this, as far as we know.
God, incredible. I mean, that reminds me of, you know, there's so much activity of these things. A lot of it happens off the coast of Los Angeles between here and Santa Catalina Island. And, you know, mm-hmm. people observe a lot of that same type of phenomenon. But I just think it's incredible that it's happening over there near Oahu right now as well. I bet it's happening in so many more places. I don't know. Maybe they just changed their exit ramp and now it's coming out a little bit further to the west, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I tell people our oceans are so undiscovered. We know that, like, there's things we will never know what's down there, the depths of what could be down there. So I firmly believe, and even Luis Elizondo believes, that we probably shouldn't be looking at the skies as much as we should be looking at the oceans when it comes to these anomalous objects or phenomena occurring. So
that's a huge takeaway, because, you know what, if we're like, hey, you know what, let's explore a little bit more of our own backyard, as opposed to, like, you know, sending out probes and satellites looking and to investigate these things, when we can actually investigate it right here, right now, I love that, and that makes so much sense to me. It's like, let's go look for those underwater alien bases, man. Why not?
Exactly, man. There's one out in the Caribbean, I believe. It's called Autech. Tell your listeners to look into that thing, because it's crazy. It is. It's an underwater base. It's real. It exists. What they're doing there, I honestly couldn't tell you. But those things exist all throughout the coasts and all over the world.
Wait a minute. Autech is a real underwater base, like a military base, or...
Yes.
Okay, got it. I thought you were like, we found an alien base under there. I mean,
I found it.
I knew that's not what you were saying. I just wanted to clarify. Autech.
Oh, no, I'm glad you did, man. Breaking on Bigfoot Collectors Club, Ryan finds alien base. who knows? I still got a little time here. I might find one.
So what do you...
Are any of these... Oh, I'm sorry, Michael.
I was just going to ask,
Are any of these fishermen reporting debris coming off any of these crafts or anything? I know that, you know, in the past there's been a lot of these stories, especially things coming out of the ocean or in and around near water. They always sort of leave some sort of metallic debris, or it falls, you know, falls from the ship. Or are you getting any type of those reports? Or
not personally, Bryce, but that's such a good point, man. The Omaha incident that Jeremy Corbell brought forward, you can hear these guys while this thing is happening. Again, this oblong-shaped object caught on infrared, you can hear the guys on the carrier, I believe it was, that recorded this, talking about what's going on. And the thing goes into the water, supposedly, from the angle we can see, and you hear the guys say, it splashed, and they're so surprised and, like, kind of excited about that it makes me feel that whatever that thing was, wasn't part of something they were doing. And they even sent out planes and, I believe, a submarine to see if they could find any wreckage for that thing. And they found nothing. Mm. And that one oblong thing in the video, it wasn't the only one. There were many, many more of that object in that area at that time. Wow. So who knows, man? But I personally have not found any wreckage underwater. I'm also not a good swimmer, so I'm probably not the one that should be going looking for that stuff.
So what do you think? I mean, if you had to take a guess, where do you fall in? Is this, are these things friendly? Are they just scientists from other planets that are observing us? Do you think that we are under the threat of invasion? Like, where does your imagination take you with this stuff?
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of somewhere in between Stephen Greer and Luis Elizondo, to be completely honest. I'm a hybrid of both these guys' sort of ideology. I think it will always remain a potential threat because we don't know what it is and we don't know how to react to it. But on the flip end, you know, even though UFOs have been sighted over our nuclear installations, you know, so many cases of that happening, they've never turned them on to, you know, blow up. They've never really caused any harm to anyone, to be honest, except for some close encounters and abduction stories I'm sure we'll talk about. But overall, there doesn't seem to be an immediate threat by these objects. So I think we should keep looking at them as potential threats, but I honestly don't think what we're dealing with is some sort of alien invasion. If anything, it's probably, like you said, Michael, scientists just coming to check out what's going on and possibly not even sending any sort of actual, what would you even say, entity?
Yeah, biological entities.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, we send probes everywhere before we go anywhere else. So maybe that's what we're seeing with the Tic Tacs and the pyramids I don't know.
Maybe we're sending probes back in time. Maybe it's us from the future sending these things back observing.
I love it, man. I'm all about that theory of UFOs, especially for the Rendlesham incident, which I'm sure you guys have touched on. Us from the future, man. I'm all in.
Look, I don't want to evoke a horrifying image from the Roswell series, but I'm going to say it again. Pocket mouth. These aliens have pocket mouths. They're not eating anything. They don't have genitalia. They're not reproducing. I think they're drones. I think they're some kind of biological robots.
That's
what I want. I want you to call us as soon as you hear, and maybe you have, that there are photographs of some of these entities. That's what I mean. Give me the black triangles all day long, but I want to see some pictures of some aliens.
We're here for the pocket mouth. Yeah,
I get it, man. Well, two things. One, if there were like an Oscars of UFO podcasting, you guys won for that Roswell series. That was incredible.
Well,
I just have to say,
sweet.
That's
I go back to the book report, basically,
but we appreciate it.
Dude, you're cutting yourself short. I go back to that series for my own research constantly.
Oh, wow.
So thank you for that. And the second thing I was going to say is, oh gosh, now I don't remember what we're talking about. Entities. You guys covered one of the most fascinating photos of an entity I've ever come across. I don't recall the name of the case, but you had that really freaky photo of the being on, kind of off in the distance.
Is the one on Ilkley Moor?
I believe so. Thing gave me chills.
Yeah,
man.
I get chills thinking about it too. I think it was in either England or Scotland, and there had been reports of strange lights, like orbs, happening over the moor, and he took his brand new camera out one morning hoping to get a photo of the orbs, these strange fairy lights, and instead said that he saw this little ET like creature hobbling up the hill. And in the photo you can see what looks to be a craft cresting over the hillside, which he said that he saw take off moments after the being went over the crest of the hill. So that's a really wild case. Really, really strange.
Yeah.
And it looks real. And it's one of those photos that, you know, Kodak looked at it and they're like, okay, whatever this is was in the photo. It's in the negative. It's not anything that's been doctored now, whether or not it's actually a real alien. We'll never know.
You know, you bring up a good point too, because it's like, I think, and we're all very careful not to say what you're seeing in the skies are aliens, but That being said, there's so much connective tissue to some of these experiences and encounters where these little creatures or whatever do hobble back into a silver tin can that shoots up off into the sky. So there is that connective tissue there to say, hey, these things are piloted by some sort of little creature with funny overalls. Like, you know, I can see why people make that jump, make that leap, you know?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. When you look at it culturally throughout the decades or centuries, we've had these beings in every iteration you can think of when it comes to folklore. I mean, you look at the work of Valet with elves and fairies and, you know, yesterday's fairies are today's gray aliens. So I wonder what comes next.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what's tomorrow's gray alien? I don't know if I want to know. But speaking of alien grays, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Ryan about some of his favorite alien abduction stories. Kicking off Wet Hot Alien Summer 2 on the BCC.
Hey guys, Bryce here. Look, I know you know that I know you know that I love all things strange, especially elusive North American wood apes who shall remain nameless. Bigfoot, it's Bigfoot. But did you also know that I created and developed a hilarious new party game called Dirty Picture Cover-Up? You see, the idea came to me when I was in high school, and I had to cover up all the dirty drawings my friends would draw in my yearbook so that I could show it to my parents without having them realize just what a bunch of degenerates my friends were. And believe me, they were. It was then that I realized that not only is it fun to draw dirty pictures, but it's even more fun to cover them up and turn them into something not dirty. And so, Dirty Picture Cover-Up, or DPCU, was born. The game is simple. Draw a dirty picture, cover it up, be judged, win. And as a way to say thanks for supporting, I'm offering our listeners a 15% discount by using the promo code Bigfoot. Okay, fine, I'm obsessed with Bigfoot, and you'll be obsessed with DPCU. To get yours, just head over to thedpcugame.com. That's thedpcugame.com, and get yours today.
Ryan, I've got a book on my desk that I've been talking about a lot since the beginning of 2021. It's called An Illustrated History of UFOs by Adam Allsuch Boardman. Have you checked this book out yet?
Yes. Oh my gosh, man. I was a little disappointed. I wasn't one of the little cartoon portraits
Yes, I mean,
I've got a ways to go. I still have to earn that. But oh my god, man, that book was incredible, and I had no idea about it, like that it was coming out or anything. So I suggest anyone just getting involved in this topic to get that book immediately. It's so cool.
It has a wonderful just little illustrated timeline, and the illustrations are gorgeous. They look like something out of a Wes Anderson movie. The thing that I love about it is the back, there's this index that has all these different alien creatures, and you can look up the year and the location that they were spotted. And I've found, and because I think Boardman is English, there's a lot of good European stuff in here too, so stuff that I hadn't even known about. But I love this book. I have it out all the time. It's sitting on my coffee table. One of the things we wanted to do other than catch up with you, talk about the current moment that's happening in ufology, is we had you on the other side a few years back where you talked about like your top five UFO stories. And that episode has actually been unlocked. So if you go over to Patreon, patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club, search Ryan Sprague, you'll find that episode is up there for free. You can check that out. It's great. But what are some of your favorite alien abduction stories or close encounter stories?
Yes, I was trying to rack my brain because you guys have covered so many so well on your show.
Well, and they can be stuff we've talked about, you know what I mean? I mean,
Yeah. Cool, yeah, because I know you did the Pascagoula, which is awesome. I highly suggest your listeners check that one out. But I do have one. I'm not sure if you guys have covered it or not, but this is the Stanford abduction of the three women. Have you guys heard of this one?
This rings a bell, but I don't believe we've done it as a story of high strangeness yet.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. I'll try to speed through it. It's a little crazy, but cool. Awesome. So yeah, this is kind of known as the Stanford abduction. So this was back in 76. There were these two women, Louise Smith and Elaine Thomas, and they were celebrating the birthday of their good friend, Mona Stafford. And they were going to a restaurant between Stanford and Lancaster, Kentucky. And after their meal, they were heading back home. It was about 11:30 p.m. They were heading back to Liberty, Kentucky. And I do want to note they did not drink anything alcohol-wise during the celebration, nor did they do any kind of drugs. Because when you hear this story, yep, you're going to... Exactly, Bryce. You're going to think they did. So they turn off of Highway 27, which would have gotten them home at about midnight. And there's a reason I'm telling you the time, as I'm sure you know where this is kind of going. So just right outside Stanford, they see this bright red object in the sky. And Mona Stafford, at first, she thought it was like an airplane or something on fire. Mm. And the thing is descending. So they're a little, a little scared. And it was on the right-hand side of their car down the road. So curiously, they kind of start really creeping, going slow down the road. And they see that it's not a plane, but this large metallic object. It was bigger than what they say, two houses. And it took up the entire road. So it sort of was like rocking back and forth, hovering in midair for a couple of seconds. And then it moved off to the left and disappeared. So, they're kind of like, okay. They keep driving and they assume that whatever it was, it had gone. But then they see this blue light in the rearview mirror and they think it's a cop, like maybe coming in to see what happened or was going to wherever this thing was. Maybe someone reported it. And they slow down and realize it's not a cop. It is the object. Oh. So it's somehow circled around and came up behind them. And Louise Smith, she suddenly loses control of the steering wheel, like something was controlling it, and the car started to accelerate. It started uncontrollably just like booking it down the road at what they clocked was about 90 miles per hour. And her foot, mind you, was not on the accelerator at all during this. So they're freaking the fuck out. And Mona, she is trying to help Louise gain control of the car and they couldn't. And then all of them, they started feeling this kind of like burning sensation in their eyes and everything went really bright. Terrifying. So the ignition light in the car, it starts lighting up on the instrument panel and was... kind of an indication that the car's engine was stalling.
Check engine.
Exactly, Riley. So, they're kind of still speeding along at this point, scared as all hell. And then they see a bright light up ahead of them, not thinking it was the object. The object at this point had darted away, but it was Highway 78. And this is when the car started to slow down and they got control of it somehow. And after they kind of collected themselves, they realized that somehow they had traveled over 15 miles from where everything had originally went down, which for them felt like a few minutes. They checked the time and it was now 1:25 a.m. They should have been home at midnight. So that would have been maybe a half an hour drive from when this event happened. So somehow an hour and a half had somehow passed. It doesn't end there, though. They get home. They go to Louise Smith's trailer in Liberty, Kentucky, actually. And they go inside to collect themselves. And they notice these huge red marks on the back of all of their necks. And their eyes were, like, super irritated. And that was kind of it. Louise Smith, she goes into the bathroom to wash her hands, kind of calm herself down, splash her face with water.
And she tears her face off in the mirror.
Poltergeist style.
Michael, you're watching too many bad Bigfoot movies.
That's a great ghost
that
movie.
That one too. Yeah. And what happened? Oh, so she's like splashing water on her face and she looks at her watch. And the thing is spinning uncontrollably. The hands on the watch were just spinning crazily. And, you know, when she put the water on her face, it immediately burned. Yikes. Like painful, unbearable pain. So they try to just go to sleep that night. I don't know how that would even be possible. And the next morning, they tell the local police and people at the local Navy outpost about what had happened, and they just were not having it. They, you know, they thought these women had gone out for the night, had a few drinks, and concocted this crazy story. But all three of them had issues after that. Mona went to the doctors, and she was diagnosed with conjunctivitis. Mm-hmm. Luis's parakeet, this is weird.
No.
Her parakeet literally died the first time she tried to touch it after this event happened.
Whoa.
And Luis's car had a ton of weird electrical issues that the, you know, the repairman could not explain. So, oh man. So they tell the Navy people again, like, this happened. Look at everything that's going on here. And the Navy, they pass it on to the Air Force, and guess who's coming to investigate from the Air Force? It is my hero, Project Blue Book's J. Allen Hynek.
Yeah, baby.
Yep. If any of your listeners don't know, this guy's like my man crush. He's this former astronomer who worked for Project Blue
Looks
Book
like Colonel
and
Sanders.
Investigated UFOs. It looks like, yep. Apparently, I got a thing for goatees or something, Michael. I don't know.
Yeah, and, but Luis Alessandro growing that fat soul patch.
Yep, exactly. Oh man, I didn't even think of that. Nah, Luis, he's not my type. Alessandro's not my type.
You're not into the Smash
so
Mouth
Hynek,
look?
Oh man, that's bringing back the early 2000s for me now, for sure. Ugh. What else
so
happened?
Hynek shows up.
Yeah, Hynek shows up. APRO, MUFON, all these like civilian-run UFO organizations show up, and this doctor, his name is Leo Sprinkle, which is awesome. Yeah, this dude, he worked with people who claimed close encounters or, you know, alien abduction experiences.
He was a regressionist, right?
Exactly. So he did just that, Bryce. He put all three women under regression separately, hypnotic regression, and they all told extremely vivid and similar stories of being brought on a craft, experimented on, and had these small androgynous beings with big heads, black eyes, doing really traumatic and scary experiments on them. Kind of like Betty and Barney
this
Hill.
Sounds it, so it, much like Betty and Barney Hill. Just the,
exactly.
The abduction itself, the red lights from the ship, and the way it followed mm-hmm. them over their car, and just them waking up and then driving into town and missing time. It sounds so similar.
Right, Michael. Which maybe, you know, it could be said that they mirrored this story, or they knew about it and came up with this. Like, I'm not, I can't say this did or did not happen.
What a fun lie to tell. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Why?
Killing your parakeet and getting conjunctivitis, totally worth it. Yeah.
Why would you want to do that? You know?
Yeah.
Wild.
Oh, it was the same entities in the same type of spaceship. You know what I mean? I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Exactly, man. So, yeah, it was pretty crazy. They told these stories, and the local police gave all three of them polygraph tests. They all passed with flying colors, and they have stuck to the story for a super long time, and it's really become a highly credible case in the alien abduction, I guess, research field.
Isn't it so weird how they're able to affect our physical reality and universe? Like, things like, you know, guiding a steering wheel and a foot pedal. And then just the whole thing about missing time and extreme traveling of distances. It's almost like they're folding space-time at that very moment and condensing it. And they enter some sort of, you know, stasis, perhaps. And from that stasis, it's like, you know, is it just them who stops, or does our whole reality around us stop? And then they sort of pluck us onto the ship, do whatever they want, and then set us back and then hit the timer again, and everything just starts back up. It, God, it's just it, more and more it seems like our whole like physical reality is so much like a dream world anyway. It's I don't know what's real is what I'm saying.
Well, Bryce, that's a good point, man. I know on your show, I brought up a case where a gentleman, it was the drive-in movie theater case. I'm pretty sure I shared it with you guys at some point in the archives, where this dude had an crescent, or what would you say, a chevron-shaped craft, huge craft, go over a drive-in movie theater that was packed with people, floated over, and again, like, shut off all the lights at the drive-in theater, apparently. Everyone's cars wouldn't start. So, like, that's physical control.
Yeah.
But when you move to, like, mental control, this guy was the only one who remembered this event happening out of hundreds of people who weren't talking about it directly after it happened. So are we dealing with some sort of control of our minds? Are they giving us instant amnesia? Again, I don't know. These are just crazy theories to pose when someone comes to you with such an extraordinary story. And I can tell you, I have found other witnesses now. So I know this dude wasn't making shit up in terms of being the only one who remembered. I found other witnesses who reached out to me after they read the story in the book. So I don't know, man. If that's the case, they can control us physically and mentally. That is a potential threat, and that's extremely just terrifying.
Well, and it's weird too, because we, like, you know, or we, by we I mean I, you know, like I compare often, you know, us to the aliens, whatever they are, as if they're the way that ants are to us, you know, that they're so beyond our scope of understanding. But we don't have, like, the ability to mentally control ants, do we? I mean, I know Hank Pym does, but he's a comic book character. But you know what I mean? Like, we can't, like, although I guess, you know, now as I say this, there's, like, studies of them, like, implanting microchips in rats' brains and controlling them, you know? So maybe this is something we evolved to do, is, like, take command of other beings or lesser evolved
To add on to that, it's taking command of somebody else's reality, right? So like, scale it down. Like, yeah, we may not be able to control ants mentally, but we can certainly control their reality. We can carve out an entire ant colony and, you know, put it in a lab and basically control everything that happens there, unbeknownst to that entire ant colony. You know,
why do I always bring up ants on this podcast?
Well, because it's a great comparative, right? It's a great analogy because, you know what, the way that these entities render us helpless, it is very comparative to, like, us influencing over the life of an ant. Just, you know, we have no control.
And also just us not being able to comprehend what these things are or describe them accurately, you know? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And then you get into the whole, like, simulation theory, too. Boy. Like, are these – so I won't go there, guys.
No, we've done
it.
We've talked about it. No, yeah, we've done this on the show.
I don't know enough about it to responsibly talk about it, but, you know, I think there's something interesting to that. Are these, like – small glitches in the quote-unquote matrix where, like, we catch a glimpse of the tic-tac or a being was kind of, like, you know, going in to repair the simulation and oops, we saw him for a half second. Like,
program engineers.
Maybe that's why they're so robotic at times, Michael. I don't know, man. There's something to
you mentioned
it. For this game to work, you need a probe up your butt. And then we will continue on.
You mentioned the Pascagoula abduction. That's one of my favorites. Weird humanoids in that one. Floating gray elephant skin-like creatures with a carrot nose, carrot ears, no eyes, lobster claws, and legs that were fused together to levitate. What is it about that case that you find interesting, Ryan?
Right there, man. The description. Yeah. Here's what I think about that case. I honestly feel that the Pascagoula abduction, encounter, whatever you want to call it, of 1973. First of all, it super effed these guys' minds up. I mean, you can hear it in the audio that the police department, for anyone who doesn't know, during this event, they went into the police department, kind of in an interrogation room, told the police this crazy story of them being abducted by these weird ass whatevers. And
carrot men.
They were terrified. They were terrified of these carrot men.
And, yeah, the sheriffs ran a secret audio recording, yep, hoping to catch them lying about it when they left the room.
Exactly. You know,
but the opposite happened. They basically doubled down on their story alone together in that interrogation room.
Mm-hmm. During that interrogation, Bryce, they, I forget which of them said it, but he was like, Jesus Christ, God have mercy. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd been through enough of hell on earth, and now I've got to go through something like this. Yeah. But they could have, you know, I guess, you know, it's crazy.
Well, they started talking. These guys were so these were two guys that were fishing on the dock by the, yes, Pascagoula River, and this almost Nerf-shaped, like football-shaped blue object comes down. And they talk in that recording about watching the portal, the doorway open and seemingly open out of, you know, a seamless, you know, doorway. And that there, he was, mm-hmm, like, did you see that door open? He's like, I saw it. That, you know, they're like, they're discovering new details with each other in that moment. Yeah. Right. It's so strange.
Which, you know, makes me believe they had a singular perception of what was going on, which is interesting because here's my theory. I think this whole thing was some weird MK Ultra, like, LSD thing, where they saw these sort of unwitting fishermen out there who they knew they could experiment on and see what ended up happening. What did they see? What did they experience?
So you think this was like a government black ops kind of thing?
I do. Interesting. Because we know these things have gone on in the past. And again, when you describe something so weird and out there, like what these guys did, I feel like they were on something. And I don't mean like by their own free will. One of the guys said, what's so damn bad about it is nobody's going to believe us. And a lot of people do not. Mm-hmm. So you really have to wonder, was it an experiment? And did they get what they needed out of it? I don't know. But at the, you know, sort of the sacrifice of these two guys who were fucked up emotionally for the rest of their lives.
And then you said that the younger guy, one of them was 18. I'm trying to remember. So it's Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker.
Parker
was the, yep, younger guy, right? Is he the guy that's still alive?
He was the younger guy. He is still alive, although in the past month or so, I have spoken to him twice now.
Oh, wow.
And he's not doing too well right now. So sending my thoughts to him and his family. But man, he sticks to the story to this day. Mm-hmm. His wife supports him. I mean, she said, why would he do this for all these years if he didn't believe this actually happened to him? And both of them never changed a beat from their story. And, again, whether it was an alien abduction or an experiment, whatever happened to them, they firmly believe it happened. And I don't want to take that away from them.
It's funny, when Tenney, you know, when Tenney was on the show, John Tenney, he said something similar about the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, that he thought it might have been some weird black ops sort of like mind control experiment as well.
I could see that.
And,
yeah.
So I wonder if there's something going on there with the Stanford as well. That who knows? I don't know. Yeah. This is so, God, it's, you so know, strange.
I'll tell you what. One thing you got to give Greer is his sort of ideology that, you know, us humans are the real monsters. You know what I mean? And you know what? There's something to that. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it, man. Yeah, humans are capable of many things, of which one is a theory in Roswell that, yeah, it wasn't aliens and a UFO. It was a, yeah, high-altitude balloon experiment with children,
yeah,
disabled, yeah, children who died from the, you know, going so far up into the atmosphere. And like you said, man, that's darker than any alien invasion, in my opinion, if, yeah, the U.S. government, mm-hmm, was doing something like that. So.
Yeah. Wow. Wild stuff. We covered that in an upsetting bonus episode on the other side that really bummed Bryce out. Again, Annie Jacobson reporting. Well, Ryan, gosh, unfortunately, this episode has flown by. we got to wrap it up. We're so excited that you came by to kick off Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction, with us. I know that, the date we're looking at is, again, June 24th for some news, maybe?
June 25th, supposedly. Okay. Now, again, this is totally informal. Like, they could delay it another 6 months, a year, 2 years. Right. But some people, including me, have heard murmurs that we may be actually getting it early.
All right.
So it could happen tomorrow, man,
guys,
from when this is airing. Who
get
knows?
Get ready. It's going to be a wild summer. Ryan, we don't know where to find the Pascagoula aliens, but where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Somewhere Skies. What else I got? Oh, I have my website where you can find the podcast, Somewhere in the Skies, releases every Monday. You can find it there. You can find all my articles at thedebrief.org. Hopefully we'll have some exciting stuff coming up about that report. And yeah, man, everything I do is over there. And I'll be hosting a panel at Contact in the Desert happening the day the report is supposed to drop. So that's going to be interesting.
Oh boy, oh boy.
I'm hosting a panel with a bunch of military dudes telling their stories from the Tic Tac event. So I'm honored to be doing that. And yeah, I hope people will check that out too. Contactinthedesert.com.
That's great.
Well, you know what, Ryan? We love that you seem to be riding this wave, and you do such a great job of sort of collating all these talking heads who are into this subject, and it you know your podcast and your website is a great place. It's a great forum to hear everybody's opinion and some of the most well thought voices in the industry and in the field.
And,
so thanks for doing
thank
that,
you.
Man.
And
it's such a great
also,
case.
You're just a trustworthy guy. You know what I mean? Like you're an honest. I appreciate your approach to this. So
there
everybody check out all of Ryan's stuff. Check us out on Instagram at Bigfoot Collectors Club, on Twitter at Bigfoot Pod. Follow me on those platforms at McMills. Nothing else to plug at this time. Bryce, Riley, what do you guys have?
No, you follow. Yeah. Follow me on the socials. I'm there. I'd love to see you there.
Likewise. I'm Peace Drone on Instagram. And thanks for listening to our podcast.
That's great. All right. Thanks again to Ryan Sprague. Until next time, everybody. Good night.
And go get regressed.
Go get yourself some t-shirts.
Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.